What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Some of you know this, some of you don't, but now all of you will. My first political home as a young organizer was at Community Coalition in South Central. I was hired by then founder and executive director of the organization and now mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass. For many years, I said, no Karen Bass, no Kat Brooks, probably to her chagrin. I've been clear for some time. I am radioactive for most mainstream politicians, except for around 2020. A lot of them messed with me then, but then I became radioactive again when Black lives stopped mattering. At any rate, she didn't just politicize me, she radicalized me. So I, as a Black politically radical militant who loves our people, was for sure saddened to see my beloved mentor move to the center, and some would say center right. This is one of the things my next guest and I bonded around, among many other things. Our love for Karen Bass and our sadness as her political trajectory changed. Dr. Malina Abdullah is a professor and the chair of Pan-African Studies at Cal State LA, as well as the co-founder of the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter and co-founder of Black Lives Matter Grassroots. Her article that we are discussing today is I Used to Love Her, A Letter to Karen Bass and the Black Political Class. Malina, before we get into it, I just want to read just a couple highlights from Karen's bio, because I think it'll help people get it a little bit. Bass was born in Los Angeles, California, the daughter of a postman and a homemaker. She was raised in the Venice and Fairfax neighborhoods of L.A. and graduated from Alexander Hamilton High School. Witnessing the civil rights movement on television with her father as a child sparked her interest in community activism. While in middle school, Bass began volunteering for Robert Kennedy's presidential campaign. In the mid-1970s, she was an organizer for the Vincent Ramos Brigade, a pro-Cuban revolution group that organized trips by American to Cuba. She visited Cuba 8 times in the 1970s. In 1980, she worked as an emergency medicine physician assistant and a clinical instructor at the physician assistant program at the USC Keck School of Medicine. She was also an anti-South African apartheid activist. In the late 1980s, Bass and other local community organizers founded Community Coalition, a South Los Angeles grassroots organization. So that's her political history, right? That's where she come from. She come from the politics that you and I, my sister warrior, amazing sister friend that I get to see soon. She comes from where we come from. But I want to take a walk through your journey with Mayor Bass. Sis, when and how did you meet KB?
Sure. So when I moved to Los Angeles, I was 21 when I moved to LA. And I moved here for grad school, but quickly, left the cup. She's sipping out of a Black Women Are Divine cup, which is Black Lives Matter Grassroots honored our wonderful Kat Brooks, my sister from another mister, as one of our first sisters that we recognized as a divine Black woman. So great to see you sipping out that cup.
One of my favorites.
So I moved to LA when I was 21 to go to grad school at USC. And, you know, like you, we're same generation. I was raised really with a consciousness because I was born in Oakland, California in the 1970s. And so movement has always been a part of my life. It's not, I can't remember the first protest. I always remembered that what we should be doing is fighting on behalf of our people, and we don't have to accept the world as it's handed to us. In fact, it's our sacred duty to fight for the world that we all want, need, and deserve. And so when I moved to LA, I started at grad school studying political science in a program focused specifically on urban poverty and inequality under Dr. Michael Preston, who is the father of what they call the New Black Politics. And quickly, I felt like you can't study urban poverty and inequality just from sitting in a classroom at USC. So I started working for the city in its youth employment program, which wasn't radical, but it did connect me to community. So we were in all these high schools training young people around how to get jobs and connecting them with employment, eventually developing a mentoring program. Karen's organization, Community Coalition, was part of that network. And I quickly, as Maxine Waters, again, we're talking about 1990s, is starting to investigate how the CIA brought crack cocaine into South Central Los Angeles, quickly began looking for mentors and examples, and Karen Bass stood as a role model. And I was really grateful to learn from her. Community Coalition was really substance abuse and prevention. She comes from a public health background. She recognized that what was happening in South Central Los Angeles was a public health crisis that should be solved with more resources for South LA. And that's where I got a lot of my grounding around what is it that we need. We don't need more police that plague our communities. What we need is more resources in our communities. And we grew close. I sat at her feet many times, although she would never call it that. But she's pretty much a generation ahead of us. So we learned a lot from her. She would be guest speaker in my class. We developed this curriculum for this Black Women's Leadership Institute that came out of my dissertation. She was on that committee. And so we grew close, and I grew to actually love her, hence the title of the article, I Used to Love Her, which, if people are not hip hop heads, don't know that comes from Common Song.
So in 2004, Dr. Abdullah, I worked on her campaign closely with her. She ran and won for assembly. And I was too young of an organizer at that time. Like, really, Coco's where I got politicized, right? That was where Community Coalition, I don't know what they do now, but literally they would take the Black staff, or leadership staff, not just Black staff, and we would go do political education for weeks at a time. Your onboarding to Coco was political education, right? There were films and things I had to read for my employment in order to be employed, and it was ongoing political education analysis. Still in yet, I was young. I didn't, once we worked on the campaign, she won, she goes to Washington. I'm a single mom. I wasn't paying a lot of attention what was happening in those first couple of years. What were some of the things that brought up concerns for you? You mentioned the article. There were some political differences, but you were able to struggle them through in a principled manner. What were they?
Sure. So when she went to the legislature first.
Legislature, yes, thank you.
Many of us were celebrating her in the legislature. I really appreciated that she took with her this idea that she shouldn't just be elected to the legislature. We should be elected to the legislature. So she had these community councils. I was a part of the community councils. Dr. Regina Freer and I began to write on Karen because there hadn't been anything written. She was the first to be the lead of a state legislature. So she became speaker of the California State Assembly. So we wrote articles on her and what does womanist leadership look like? And so there were some questions, and she talked about it, that she felt torn. We would talk about everything from her feeling like she had to straighten her hair to be elected to, I remember having conversations about her having to buy St. John's suits. And she was like, these are hideous, but I have to wear them, right?
I was with her for both of those events.
Yeah, yeah. So you remember these conversations, right? That she felt torn. How do you make inroads into a system that has disdain for Black women, right? And so we wrote about, like, what is womanist leadership, which was really the subject of my dissertation, and how does Karen Bass embody womanist leadership? And there was this tension, but we felt like her heart and her desire was always to stay grounded in a politics that sought to empower Black community in South Central Los Angeles in particular. When she transitioned over to Congress, that's when I began to see some real, real issues. And she appointed me to her congressional council. So it's not like we'd fallen out, but there were things, support for policing. And she knows better. She's one of the people who helped us to understand, right? That more money for police is a bad thing, right? And she began to make some of these concessions to police that became really tangible once she moved over to Congress. But it felt like her heart was still with us, right? So I was invited. She put me on when she was head of the Congressional Black Caucus, put me on the prime panel to speak, the keynote panel for the Congressional Black Caucus that year. And that year was when Hillary Clinton was running for president. And I remember her being, I think, pretty disappointed in me when the question was asked about how we get more support for Democratic candidates. And I said, that's not on us, that's on the Democratic Party. They want our support, they should run better candidates, right? So I felt this tension, but we're at a point now where as mayor, I feel like, and I, there was something that just happened yesterday where LA City Council approved her request to increase funding for LAPD, where every other department is being decimated, right? Where we have furloughs, where we have people being, you know, positions not being filled for essential positions, that LAPD is recession-proof. LAPD can do no wrong, and that has a lot to do with a mayor that is really betraying what she says her values are and what we understood her values as being.
I want to just know that you and I are still having this conversation carefully, because if this was anyone else, I would have asked these questions in a different way. There's still love for Karen Bass, the human. I should talk for me. There's still love for Karen Bass, the human. There is deep disappointment for Karen Bass, the elected official. I want to, before we get into her right now, I want to talk about two incidents that I think are really important that for me were sort of the, oh, okay, this is more than just sort of compromise. And I want to talk about that too. I want to talk about the role of elected officials and their job to compromise. But before we get there, the two incidents. The one is very closely tied to you. I'm a fierce defender of you. I'm a fierce lover of you. And I, you know, don't mess with my girl. Talk about the mayoral debate and what happened to you, what the campus play. I watched that video. Like, I remember watching that video and screaming out loud.
Yeah. So when Karen was running for mayor in 2022, there was a debate that was held on my campus. I've been teaching at Cal State LA for 24 years almost now. And so I'm former chair of my department. I'm trained as a political scientist, but I teach in Pan-African studies. That's my home. So Black politics is my jam, right? I was teaching a class called Black Power. It was a field work class, and I bring my students into spaces where they can see Black Power. What better example of engaging in Black Power than watching the first Black woman, serious Black woman contender for mayor in Los Angeles on your own campus, called the center that was sponsoring the program, asked if we could come, and told by this now who I know to be a Zionist head of the center, who I had been close with, didn't know he was a Zionist, but now I'm learning, and asked if we could come. He said, yes, just come. So I come with my students. My students are denied admission. I've been on that campus 24 years. This is a debate that's happening in the student union theater. I know every entrance to every building on that campus. So they want to deny us getting in the front door. I just walked around the back door and went in and took a seat in the theater, right? The theater was empty. The theater holds almost 200 people. There were maybe 10 people in there. And so I took a seat at the back of the theater and wait for the debate to start. The head of the center, his name is Rafe Schoenenschein, comes over and asks for my ticket. I'm covered. It's 2022, but I always wear a mask, but I had on a mask, so I thought maybe he didn't know who I was. And I pulled down my mask. I said, Rafe, it's me. And he said, you need a ticket. And I was like, no, So I just sat there, waited for the debate to start. Next thing I know, campus police are called in, and I'm sitting with a girlfriend of mine who's also an academic. They tell us to leave. She gets her stuff, and I say, no, I work here. And next thing I know, they've grabbed me. They drag me down the aisle, one on each shoulder. I still don't have full mobility in my left shoulder. And then two meet us at the end of the aisle. I'm pulled in four directions, one cop on every limb of my body. And as they're assaulting me, I'm yelling out, Karen, help me. Help me. And I'm yelling, I work here. I teach here. I teach here, just trying to let people know that this is what's happening. She said nothing. Nobody on that stage said anything. And they watched me be brutalized and carried out, not just through the theater, but then eventually I was carried out through the entire building, spread eagle, pulled in four different directions. Thankfully, there was a demonstration outside. Students saw it, community members saw it because the building is glass. They ran around the back entrance where the police were trying to throw me into a car, and the people got me released. So that's what happened, and that was really deeply disappointing and hurtful, right? Not just politically, but like you said, Karen is our friend and had been a role model, and I didn't think that would happen. Her answer to why she didn't intervene is, I didn't know that was you. One, you did know that was me. Two, I don't care if it was some other black woman being pulled out, spread eagle by campus police. You should at least say, hey, what's going on back there, right? You should say something. And she didn't. And that's when I saw that her heart has changed.
The second thing, the reason why part of why I wanted to read her bio was because I think it's really important that people understand that she was an activist against the, and not just like an activist, like she was like leadership in Los Angeles around the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, which we are watching a violent example of apartheid in Palestine. And yet, when there was an auction of Palestinian land to sell illegally to settlers, Palestinian land, there was a protest. The response of Mayor Bears was to condemn the protesters, not the Israeli settlers. That, for me, was the, I don't even know what the word is. That was, I was like, oh, this is where we're at. Because that is such a depart, like, I don't understand anyone. I don't care who you are. I don't understand anyone that is not screaming from the rooftops, F Israel. I just don't. I can't make it make sense. I do Palestine Pulse on the show every Monday. Even before that, I was standing in solidarity with us. So I can't make it make sense, and I can't make it make sense from someone who I know knows better.
That's right. She has not made one statement about a free Palestine, not one pro-Palestinian statement. And we actually talked because, we remained on after the incident happened, after I was brutalized at Cal State LA, I called her because that's what we do, right? I called her and she came over and she sat in this room on this couch and told me I didn't know that was you, but we had a conversation. So we maintained communication. And when she was elected, we spoke, we maintained a communication. She came to, I think we were the first meeting that she had after taking office. I want to love her. And that's really what that song is about, right? I used to love her as a longing for the Karen that we know. It's not, I hate you. It's a longing for her to come back into herself. So when everything happened at UCLA, when the students were being checked, she actually called me. I think she called me. We spoke. I don't know if she called me or I called her, because police were being called in on these student protesters. And she didn't condone it, but she said that that was Gavin Newsom's call. This is your city. You know, this is your city. And so, you know, it's been very disappointing. And I think the word I've been using a lot is a betrayal of values to watch how she's gotten down around Palestine, how she's gotten down around policing, which for me is my breaking point. You know, what she's done in hiring the only, we spoke out about, if you gonna hire a new police chief, let it not be Jim McDonnell, right? And that's who she appoints, right? Jim McDonnell, you know, the overspending on police, the raises to police while every other city department is being cut, the increase of police spending. And now, and I just gotta get this in, that she has only 2 days ago made a passive reference to black father of two girls, Keith Porter, who was murdered by ICE on New Year's Eve. She's only made passing reference to him. She has not called for the arrest of the ICE agent, whose name is Brian Palacios, who murdered this black man on New Year's Eve. She has not done anything. She has not said anything in support of this black man who was killed in her city on New Year's Eve by ICE. And so I feel like she's really, no, I'm observing her betray her values. And I'm observing the entire political class really do the same. Her mentee, Marquise Harris Dawson, who's also our friend, is doing the same.
Okay, that's another segment. Phone call first. I have to ask this question because it's a question about elected officials and in general. We know that the rules of the game, right? And I'm a paraphrase by the rules of the game because we don't have to do anything, right? I say all the time, all I got to do is stay black, breathing, and eventually die. Other than that, I don't have to do ish. But the rule of the game is elected officials are supposed to compromise, right? And as a matter of fact, when you look at why folks were down with her becoming the speaker, it's because it said she had a gift for being able to talk to both sides of the aisle at a political time where that was possible, right? Where both of the aisles were actually talking to each other still. It's why I'll never run again. Is why when people are like, oh, I wish you were American, I'm like, I'm so glad that that never happened. I'm so glad that I lost that. I am so glad I dodged that bullet, because I'll tell you, they would have recalled me or killed me within 4 weeks. Because I'm not built like that. What's right is right, period. See, activist, not politician. That's who I belong on this side of them halls. How much for you has this been for her doing what's needed so she can get other good policies passed? Are there places where you would point and say, okay, well, here she did things that were good for marginalized people of Los Angeles, so I understand what she had to do. This.
No, there's not a single win for the people. I mean, maybe. Let me say this. She did support wage increase for grid workers. That's our interventionists. So she supported a modest wage increase for grid workers who still earn less than one third of what police earn, even though the intervention workers are the reason that crime is at an all-time low in Los Angeles. And so we should be clear about that. She's increasing police budgets, increasing police salaries, when the only segment of violent crime that's up in the city of Los Angeles is, guess what? Police shootings of our people, which is up by 70%. Crime overall is at the lowest point it's been since 1959. So what's driven down crime, especially violent crime, intervention workers? She did support at the beginning of her term a modest increase for grid workers. That's the only win we can point to. She has not supported. She helped the city renege on its commitment to pay Olympics workers a livable wage. They committed to it and then reneged on it. Right. Her appointments have been terrible. The way in which she's enabled policing to really run rampant in communities has been been terrible. Her divestment has been terrible. Divestment from things like libraries and parks has been terrible. So, no, there's not. I mean, and I won't go into because I don't want to give fodder to the right. But the handling of the fires The handling of the fires has been atrocious. And I know I'm primarily concerned about Altadena because that's Black community. I know she doesn't have control in Altadena, but if you talk to people in the Palisades, who those are not my people, right? The way in which you know the what's been, we said defund the police, not defund the fire department.
How hard was it for you to write this article, and why'd you decide to do it? How long did it take you?
A week. Usually I write my column in about 2 to 3 hours. This one took me a long time and I felt compelled. And so I spent a lot of time in prayer and meditation around it. What made me write it is the proposed increase to LAPD, which again was just made real yesterday. We'd been betrayed on so many fronts with who she appointed to both, again, as chief. Jim McDonnell is so bad. He was colluding with ICE so terribly when he was sheriff that people voted him out to vote in the worst sheriff in history in Alex Villanueva, right? She appointed two Zionists to the LA Police Commission, which is the oversight body. One of them who calls Black people, especially Black Muslims, homegrown terrorists, right? So there had been this lead up, but for me, I could not speak to the increase to the budget, to the police budget, when everything else was being cut. When we spent, the city just spent over $260 million in lawsuit payouts as a result of police misconduct primarily. So I could not do it, or I would feel like I'm also betraying my values. And even though I love Karen, I love my people most. I love my God most. And I felt like I had to. And I went over it over and over and over again to make sure that it, do what I could to make sure it wasn't a personal attack. And I hope people could feel my heart that I do love Karen as a human being and as a Black woman and as somebody that I used to call friend and role model. I do love her in that way, and I want her to be the best of who she is.
I'm going to ask, say one more thing, and then I have to move on, because I also have to tell people that they can come hear your brilliance in just like 24 hours. We had Kali Akunu. We're doing the speaker series. We had Kali Akunu here in Oakland last night, and we were talking about, you know, mandates of the left, like how we were brought up, you know, politically. And one of those things is principal struggle. One of those things is calling behavior out. One of those things is liberalism kills. We ain't supposed to do liberalism, right? We're not supposed to just see behavior and turn the other way and pretend that it's not happening, because we know that that gets people killed. That gets movements messed up. That dilutes the message from the people. That waters down people's ability to have an analysis as they resist. But that is not a popular thing to do these days. Right. Unless people are slaughtering you on Instagram. Right. Hi, you and I both live that life. Right. But there's not. I guess it's not a question. I guess it's a closing. I guess it's an appreciation, sis, for you being rooted in political principle and integrity and having conversations that have to be had and not burying your head in the sand because it's going to make people mad.
Yeah. Thank you. And I'll say this, because I always believe in hope. The response to the column is still coming, right? I've been in, you know, we got to be in spaces that are sometimes our freedom fighters and sometimes actual members of the Black political class. I was in one of those Black political spaces recently. King Day always brings people out. People who you think of as middle of the road people, they won't say it out loud, but when they hug me, they whisper in my ear, I read that column and I agree with you. I read that column and what we gonna do, right? And so I pray, one, that Karen is called into the best of herself. Mayor Bass is called into the best of herself. But two, also that other members of the Black political class and the political class generally recognize that we don't need them to be in that seat if all they're gonna do is have their face face there. We don't need black faces in high places. If you're not going to take the people along with you and do what's best for us, if you're not going to be accountable to us. And so my prayer is that that will be a calling. Now it's a calling out. We used to say call in, but that's a calling out because it's public. That we don't care if you're elected, if your election means nothing other than saying, look, we have this brown face, this black face in this seat. We got to win something from you being there.
Y'all, tomorrow night, Oakland, tomorrow night, Dr. Malina Abdullah and me will be in conversation at 7 o'clock p.m. at 1540 Broadway at BAM House, the Black Arts Movement House. We're going to be talking about the Justice for Keith Porter campaign. We're going to be talking about ICE in L.A. It's an ICE in L.A. update for the Bay by Dr. Malina Abdullah in conversation with me as the precursor to the Love Phenomenon with members of Alphabet Soup Concert. It's a fundraiser for APTP. No one turned away for lack of funds. It's tomorrow. Doors open at 6:30, 7 o'clock. We're going to kick off this conversation. You want more of this fire? You will be there. Thank you, my sister.
I can't wait. Love you too. Bye.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.